Week Live, brought to you exclusively by Abu Garcia.
What's up, everybody? How you doing, peoples? Hope you're having a wonderful day, afternoon, evening, morning, wherever you're at, wherever you're watching and listening. Got a good show for you today. Joining me in just a minute, my good buddy John Cruz, and we're going to be talking about a lot of stuff. Want to remind you, this show is now brought to you exclusively by Abu Garcia, makers of some amazing rods and reels. Head on over to abugarcia.com and check out their stuff. I've been pimping this one a lot, but that Revo Rocket spinning reel, 7:6:1 gear ratio. Unheard of in the spinning reel world. Unheard of. Regular fishing, forward-facing sonar, fast gear ratio, and spinning reel will help you. So check that out, abugarcia.com. Also brought to you by the Ike Foundation, trying to get kids fishing one at a time. Head over there, man. IkeFoundation.org. You want to find out how you can help get kids fishing. Head on over there and get some great information. Also, if you're looking for the list of dates, we have it up there. Of course, we have our kids events starting in just a little bit here. We've got a Hook'em Early tournament in May, Gloucester City, New Jersey. And then, of course, that Pro-Am, June 1st this year on the Upper Chesapeake Bay, giving away a Basscat, brand new, Yamaha, brand new, just amazing first place prize. IkeFoundation.org. Sign up. It's not too early. All right. Enough of the chit-chat. I want to get him on. I know he's in the truck. We're going to be talking to him about it. Joining us now on Ike Live for probably the 2,000th time in 10 years, my good friend John Cruz. John!
Yo, what's up, buddy?
What up, John? Yo, John. Yeah.
Man, we're burning up this road like we do, you know.
I love it. I love it. All right, so we talked a little bit about it. I didn't want to talk too much, but you got on the road. You were saying the hardest part is getting on the road. Tell me about that. I think a lot of people assume that we have like this, ensemble of people. Handlers and people that handle all that. And you just get in and maybe you fly there, maybe you got a private jet or whatever, but no, that's not true. What's the reality of this here?
Yeah, the reality of being a professional bass angler in general is that, earlier in your career, you don't have near as many obligations and you kind of leave a couple of days early, do whatever, you don't have the time crunch, but the more time goes, the more obligations, the more stuff you create. I mean, especially with me with missile baits, and then with April being Autism Awareness Month, we'll get to that stuff in a minute. You have all your stuff with the Ike Live and the Ike Foundation and all your sponsor obligations. And like that stuff adds up on you to where you get to be about three. I mean, you try to get all as much of it done, but then you get about 3 days out from when you need to leave and you're like, oh, shoot.
Yes.
This is going to be a time crunch. So that's what it is. And then once you get on the road, it's like, it's all behind you. You leave it all behind. And now you're just going to go and compete and only have minor distractions.
Minor. Right. Minor compared to all the stuff before and during the drive. Now, so you're on the road, you're headed down to Florida. We've got two events coming up back to back. Practice is unusual for this one because it starts on a Sunday. So I'm assuming that's why you're leaving a little early.
Yes. And, I felt like at the beginning of each of the seasons in the last couple of years, I've left a little bit early and then spent a day or day and a half on the water in the vicinity of where I'm fishing just to kind of get my mind into that part of the country and fishing and out of QuickBooks and out of spreadsheets and out of payroll and all that stuff that we have to do, get out of that mindset, get into the actual fishing mindset. And so I'm going down a day early, going to fish with a buddy of mine down here, Mike Davis. And we're going on just not anywhere where we're fishing, obviously, just another lake. Wherever he wants to go is where we're going to fish. And just get into the kind of Florida fishing mentality down here.
That's awesome. While you're talking about that, I want to bring this fact up. I've known you for a long time. And when I look at your career, John, you're really, really good in Florida. And specifically, you're really, really good at St. John's River. I don't think I've ever asked you point blank, why? Why? Why is it? Why are you like St. John's special? Like, I don't know the numbers. If I was a producer like I used to back in the day, I would have researched it or something. But, dude, every time you're right there, you're in the top 10, you're in the top 20. Why? Why is that?
The first couple times we went to the St. John's, well, the very first time I think was 2001, maybe in December of 2001. The very first time we went there, I went there for an event, and I actually locked a rodman because it looked more like the places that I was used to fishing. I didn't figure the river out the first time I went there. I couldn't hardly buy one. And then the next time, I don't know how many times we've been there over the last 20 some years, probably 7 or 8 times. But after about the third or fourth time, things just started to click a little bit. You fish the place enough, or any place really, you start to learn productive and unproductive water. So you maximize your time in productive water, and then you minimize your time in unproductive water, part of it. But the other part of it is just understanding and knowing tides. And I think the deceiving thing for a lot of anglers, I mean, you understand tides, a handful of the guys on tour ish does, a handful of guys on, that fish tidal fisheries often or grew up fishing them, they understand the tides and what kind of stuff you fish on high tide versus low tide, outgoing, incoming, and seasonal. Yeah. And so like the funny thing about the St. John's is that the tide, it's not a huge tide swing,
right?
But yet those fish still do things based on the tide, and it can be deceiving to a lot of anglers that you're like, oh man, I went in this area and I caught 3 in this on this bank right here yesterday. Well, they didn't even know what tide it was,
right?
And they've got to be able to duplicate the tide in order to duplicate those bites, and that just adds an element to it that. It just makes it a fun place to fish, man. I think it's awesome. Yeah.
I love the diversity of the St. John's. I've had the opposite. My track record in Florida has not been great over the years. And I think I know my mistake is I don't like to slow down. I can't pick stuff apart. I've had marginal success in the state of Florida. But in saying that, I like the St. John's. I like the Harris chain. I like the diversity of those fisheries. But, John, I want to talk to you about this. Traditionally, the tours, not just bass, but the tours hit Florida, Okeechobee, Kissimmee, Harris chain, St. John's. We hit Florida in December, January, February, especially January, February.
Yep.
Very unusual that we are visiting, the elites are visiting both the Harris chain and St. John's in April. What do you, does that make you excited? Are you nervous, or you know what I mean? It's a totally different time. Like,
I think it's awesome. You mentioned that, and for years and years, it's like we're stuck in a rut. Every time we go to Florida, we go down there at the absolute worst time to fish Florida. You can go to Okeechobee anywhere from like May to October, and it's fantastic. Yeah. And then we go down there when all these fronts are rolling through, and the fish are just like, nah, we're gonna wait for happy times again. We're not biting. We're not playing this game.
Yeah.
And so it's a real fickle bite down in all of Florida for the winter months. But that's kind of the only place that you can compete. So we get kind of squared into that little spot where we have to go there,
right?
Because you can't really go anywhere else. But I'm glad that they switched it up this year. Went to Texas first, even though I stunk the joint up in both events.
Me too.
Those are behind us, and we're gonna move on to Florida, and it's gonna be a different deal. I can tell you right now, Mike, you are not going to have to slow down like you normally do.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll just tell you that right now. Woo.
I love that. And I'm with you, John. I'm in your camp. I'm excited that it's a different time. And obviously, I think these fish are going to be doing different things. What do you expect? Do you expect less spawners and more post spawners? Do you expect summertime fish. What do you expect when we go down?
So I think you're going to see fish in kind of all phases, in both events, really. In the, you know, the one factor I feel like for the Harris chain is that it's so much further past the spawn, but they've still had some fun throughout March. Nothing severe, yeah. But just a little bit. And not, that just it keeps the lingering a little bit to, you know, May or I'm.
We got you, John. You went in and out. Yeah, you went in and out a little bit. We got you again. We got you again.
Okay, I broke out my spectacles to figure out what was going on here. But what I was saying is we've had some fronts through March, and really even this week down there, and the fish still haven't really got that hot, warm season groove, which they want to. When that hot, warm season groove comes, you got your bluegill spawn that starts to come on. You got your tilapia spawn that starts to come on. Maybe a little south, but they have a few tilapia around. So that kind of stuff is really cool because it's going to be different than what people are used to seeing from the last 6 or 8 years plus that we've been to Florida.
Right. I'm looking forward to it. I think they're going to be good events. I think you're going to see a different Florida. You're still going to see big bass caught. I'm very, very excited.
Oh yeah.
But besides
you'll see more bass caught.
I hope so. I'd love that. Yeah. I'd love that. I hope I'm one of the ones catching more bass, you know?
Yeah.
You mentioned it in the beginning of the interview. Besides April being a great month to tournament fish and we're going to Florida here. April is Autism Awareness Month. Right. And I want to, but before we even get into that, I just want to say, John, thank you for taking this campaign under your wing. You've done it years and years ago. Not enough professional anglers do this kind of thing. Not enough of them take up a good cause, do something for the greater good, and very proud of you for doing that. So thank you for doing that.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. And you know, you do year round with the Ike Foundation, so you know, it's a big time, commitment.
Yeah,
but it's worth every second of it. You know, with the autism awareness, it's really only 1 month. I just try to orchestrate everything behind the scenes. We've got a lot of, I mean, people donate all kind of stuff. You know, this year is really cool because we've been doing this for over 12 years. I can't even remember how long it's been now, but this year is kind of the year of the caretaker. Is the kind of what I'm coining it. And you know, we talk a lot about autism, making the awareness. I think the awareness piece is going in a really good direction. A lot of people are aware of it. A lot of people still don't totally understand it, but that's okay. They understand a lot of the work is done at the local facilities, but we don't talk enough about the caretakers. And this is parents. It can be aunts, uncles that could be caretakers. It could be paid caretakers. But the caretakers, it's a relentless job that is almost thankless. And I partnered with a company called the Winners Travel Foundation. It's a nonprofit started by Clay Louder, a bass fisherman as well. But he has these trips that he does for veterans and caretakers of disabled people. He is donating two trips to be given away this month for caretakers of autistic people. We're going to host the application form on the Misselbaites website. If you go on there, there's a slider that you can get on there and then provide. You can see the blog post at the bottom or the slider that'll have the link on there as to how to nominate somebody. You can nominate yourself, or you can nominate somebody that you know that is deserving of a trip. And we've got a panel of people that are going to try to sort through all these nominations and pick a couple worthy people. It's for their the caretaker and one guest. So that's a kind of a cool twist for this year.
That's super cool. And I you hit it right on the head. I think a lot of times, even with what we do with the Ike Foundation, you forget about, you know, the other side. So on the Ike Foundation, you forget about the parents and the uncles and the adults taking the kids. You forget about them sometimes. So
yeah,
I love what you're doing. And just again, real quick. So if people want to get into this, they want to support this, head to the missile site, head to missilebaits.com. They can see the form over there, all that stuff.
Yep. Yep. Okay. And then we're also going to be raising money, doing some auction items as well later this month. But really the focus up until the end of these two tournaments is going to be on the piece with the nominating people for the trips. And then also people can buy the bracelets and the stickers on Missile Baits as well. And 100% of those.
I love the bass. I love the bass.
100% of those proceeds go to the, Blue Ridge Autism and Achievement Center, which is my local autism awareness, autism facility that helps with people with autism.
Yeah, that's awesome. Amazing, amazing, good cause, John. And you know what I love is that the bass and the fishing community supports it with open arms. Like bass always gives you a platform at tournaments to speak about it. And that's so cool. You know what I mean? To have the people you're working with and your peers say, "Hey man, this is good stuff. You know, we love what you're doing." That's feeling.
We got like Drew Cook and Brian Schmidt. They wear the bracelet all year. They wear it all year. And they've done it for years. Drew Cook, after a couple of years, he said, "Man, can I get another bracelet?" I was like, "Yeah, sure." And he showed me his, and it was just
completely worn.
Yeah. It looked like it had been out in the sun for years and years, which I guess it had. But I gave him one just, and then like Brandon Polinick doing special edition merch every year for autism, and then donating the proceeds to charity there. You're right. It's very heartwarming to see the support of the entire fishing community behind autism and other causes as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, you're doing a great thing, John. Very, very cool. Very proud of you for doing that. You mentioned missile to go over to missile and get all that info, but I'd want to switch to missile. I want to talk about missile a little bit. And I want to talk about two things. The first thing I want to talk about, and I know we've mentioned this before on the show, but dude, what, in my opinion, like one of the best business moves, decisions you've ever made in your life. And, I look at the sport, how fickle, you know, sponsorship is and product development with companies and all that.
Yeah.
And you just said, screw it. I'm doing this myself. I'm taking it out of the realm of this weird, who knows what's going to happen. And you control your own destiny. I'm just so, all these years later, I'm so amazed that you did that. And successfully, you know?
Yeah. What? I mean, I appreciate that, man. It's been a journey for sure. It's been 12 years that we've been doing missile.
Yeah.
And, it's hard to believe really that it's been that long. I know you were involved with it from the beginning on the missile jig side.
Yeah.
And, it's been really cool to be able to watch it grow. I didn't know exactly how long it would happen or any of that kind of stuff, but, it really started because I was working with Spro and helping them design baits and promote them. And I really enjoyed the process. I thought that was so cool. I said, I need to do this for soft plastics. One thing led to another, and then ended up starting Missile Baits. And man, it's been crazy how here it is 12 years later, and we're still growing and still getting into more distribution and still coming out with new baits. It's a lot of fun. It's not come without plenty of trials and tribulations. That's for sure.
Right. It's a lot of work. It has ups and downs. It can be a struggle just like any other business, right? It's got those.
That's right.
But like, how good does it feel, to know that, like, I'll just give you two as an example. Like, you can't go anywhere and not hear somebody throwing a D-bomb, flipping a D-bomb, right? It's become an iconic bait, like a man's jelly worm almost. You know what I mean? Yep. Like, it's a D-bomb. Everybody throws a D-bomb. And the same thing with, I think, the mini flip, you know, in certain respects. We've talked about this off camera. You know,
well, I'll tell you this, Mike. Last weekend, Noah and I, my stepson Noah and I, we fished a local tournament. We didn't do that good. We only had we had small ones. We got beat up. But the tournament was won on a mini flip. So I thought that was a win. I was like, woohoo.
Yeah, it makes you feel good. And we've talked about this before, but like, you make something that becomes iconic and people talk about and people imitate, you know, like, so we've always talked about it, but we came out with the mini flip. And then like within the course of about 2 to 3 years after that, every company has a mini flip. And I know for me, it feels flattering, but it's got to feel good, right? To know you've created iconic baits, you know?
It does. I mean, we created that thing. That was a joint effort between me and you. And I mean, that's what all the jigs are, and including the monster jig.
Yeah. Yeah. The monster jig. I'm glad you brought that up, because that is one of the Frankenstein. I would give that a Frankenstein term baits that we created, and still super new, still on the, what I consider the front side of a brand new category, right? And when you do that, there's always that skepticism, and there's always a percent of people that are so unsure, and they almost, you know, they're just scared of it because it's new. But talk about that. Is the monster jig really like scary? Should people be scared about that bait, or what's the deal with that thing?
It's funny. I was in a tackle shop this week down at Angler's Choice Marine, and I was talking with Trent, who runs it, and we were talking about the monster jig, and we were kind of walking through the tackle shop, and I said, looks like you've had some monster jig sales, because he had about two pegs that were empty, two of them had one on it, a couple of more I just had two on it. He goes, I mean, you can't dispute that right there. That says what you do is that they're selling and people are picking them up. But as you mentioned, it's still so new, that category, that a lot of people are picking them up and they still haven't figured out how to use them yet. Even the trophy guys. So that's just going to take some time. You and I are going to do more education on it this year. As we fish it more and kind of educate people on it a little bit more, it's going to be kind of cool to see all the different ways. I know the Muskie guys are jumping all over it.
Striper guys too. Saltwater striper guys as well.
Yeah, they're all over it. To be able to have a jig with a big skirt like that you can throw around and in cover, and bounce off of cover, deflect off cover, and still have a hook big enough to catch and hook those big monster fish.
Yeah, giants. I think the swim bait comparison that you made, and you were the first one to really make me aware of that. And when it hit me, and I fish all the time, so it should have hit me, but it didn't. And you kind of sent me, I don't remember, you sent me a text or you sent me a post that you guys made, and you made this swim bait comparison that made it make sense. Talk about that real quick.
Absolutely. I mean, the glide bait phenomenon is alive and well. Basically, every bass angler is trying and using the glide baits now. But with the glide baits, you've got like the 7 inch is probably the standard size. And in that 7 inch standard size, you've got 8 inch becoming more popular, 9 inch becoming more popular. If you take one of those 7 inch glide baits, put it up next to that monster jig with a trailer on it, with a big trailer on it, they're about the same size. So between the 7 inch, and now people are looking at the 8 and 9 inch glide baits, which are actually bigger than the monster jig.
Yes.
Then you're like, okay, now I see. It's like the swim bait of jigs, and that's what it is.
Yeah. Great analogy. Great comparison there for sure. I have to ask this before we go to the next topic real quick. And it's kind of it's an interconnected question. You know, the first part is, how's business at Missile? But let me segue. How is business at Missile because of forward-facing sonar? Now, I do want to explain myself real quick before you answer, which is, I have heard from other companies that have straight up said, you know, our minnow bait sales through the roof, our jig head sales through the roof, but we're struggling with crankbaits. We're struggling with jigs. We are selling less big plastics, you know, big full-size destroyers, you know, baits like that. We're selling less of that stuff. What? Talk to me about that in reference to Missile. How's business? Has it impacted your sales?
Yeah, it has. It just kind of like changes the dynamics a little bit on what's selling more and what's selling less. So you really want to throw gas on the stuff. And this is nothing really new in the tackle world, other than the fact that now the forward-facing sonar is the reason for it. So in the past, we've had trends that a couple years back, we saw a trend of big baits, big worms, big Cincos, big everything. And then like a couple years before that, everything was small and finesse. And then, like 2 years ago, really before the FFS stuff came up, is the micro and the BFS, bait finesse system that became, so all the rods and all the reels. Yeah. All the, a lot of the tackle that was, if it wasn't tiny, small, it wasn't trendy and hot. So we've seen this before. Now it's just, with forward facing sonar. So obviously your jerk bait sales are going to be good. Like you said, jig head minnows, any minnow style bait is going to be good. Drop shot baits are still, are trending in the right direction. You know, like our magic worm that Robo makes for us. That continues to just, you know, kind of climb. The more people realize that that's a double pack, like you get twice as many worms as a Robo worm pack. A lot of people are kind of really gravitating towards that bait once they kind of get that under their head. But man, it's just the sales are up for Missile. Sales are not up for all tackle companies. We're up more than double digits, and I know that some tackle companies are similar to us that have kind of ridden that trendy wave. But that's what you have to do in the tackle industry as far as selling baits and things, is to stay on top of what's going. Like Berkeley's done a really good job of coming out with an entire line of forward-facing sonar baits in order to try to capitalize on that. So that's not going to last forever. That's going to kind of fade out and become just one of the techniques that people use. So as long as they're on top of that and not making sure that they go all in as a company to forward-facing sonar, that could be bad. You still have to be diverse and have the conventional stuff. I mean, like our Chunky D sales, it's a flipping bait, but you could use it on a swim jig or, you know, a flipping jig as well. That continues to just be really strong. D-bomb sales just continues to be good and strong. They haven't really tapered off. They're still good, but the spunk shad minnow style baits are, really off the charts, as you mentioned.
Through the roof. Yeah. That's interesting. And I think it's a great point for people watching. You know, John, we get a lot of people that are starting small bait companies. They aspire to be a Missile. And I think it's a great point to stay ahead of the curve, to ride the wave, but not go all in. Right. That's a great point.
And you got to be, you got to have an identity as well. Like you have to be kind of known for something and known for a category, unless you're one of the giant conglomerates like a Z-Man or, Berkeley or somebody like that, which has huge deep pockets. Other than that, you kind of have to be known for something, I feel like.
Right. I do want to switch gears to this topic. And I know for me personally doing this show, I almost feel like I want to vomit every time I bring this up. I've talked about it so much, but I have to, while you're here, get your thoughts on this. And before I even ask the question to you, I did let the cat out of the bag a little bit last night. Becky and I did a live from the bar. We're bringing that little live series back a couple times a month, maybe. And I have had, lot of people, and I will not say their names, but a lot of top touring pros from both circuits reach out to me like in the last week, like literally getting text messages. There's this, I don't know, maybe like a little thing happening in the fishing world of people saying they've had enough of it. They literally want to stand up against it. And it's so, you know, right. They're to the right. They're just anti.
Are you talking about James Watson?
Not James Watson. Oh. No, not James Watson. James Watson has problems. I don't want to give him any more. But
I love James. Yeah. I was just playing.
And here's the other thing, though. I did want to ask you this because we've had guests on the show that are so tied into a electronics manufacturer that they could not be honest. And they prepared me for it. They said, look, I can't talk about this. And I understand. And I get it, right? I totally get that. So, but I got to ask you, John, you know, and this is like live, you got to be honest. Give us your honest opinion and take on forward facing sonar, where it's at now, where it's headed. What's your honest opinion on it?
Okay. So I've got a twofold answer for you, Mike. I've got the first part of it is going to be, my opinion. And the second part is going to be a solution. Okay. I think a very viable solution.
Yeah.
That I've never heard anybody say, and I'm going to kind of let it out to the world right here with you.
Yeah.
If you want.
I would love that.
I've run it by a couple of people and they're like, yep. I think that could work. So here it is. Here's my opinion first.
Okay.
So my opinion is that the horse is out of the barn as far as the technology goes. And there's only going to be more innovative technology that comes along. I see points on all sides of the argument for and against forward facing sonar. Like I get it on all sides. Yeah. I'm not for or against it. I think it's fascinating. I think it's fun. I think it can be unbelievably frustrating at times from a couple standpoints. One, from the, like, I see the fish and I can't catch them. Also to the fact that I'm seeing a million fish and I don't know what they all are. I'm getting a lot better at that. But the other factor of it is we're old and we've been fishing a long time. Yeah. We've been fishing a long time. It's different. It's something we're completely having to learn. And then we've got a lot of young guys that are coming along that just go all in with this and they hand us our ass.
Yeah.
And that's so, I mean, if somebody figured out a new pitch in baseball and none of the old hitters could hit it, but all the new players, they figured out how to hit it quick, that it would be the same way. So, you have to adapt in any sport. You know, NASCAR drivers figured out a new way to draft and, the old guys were like, well, I've never done it that way. I ain't doing it that way. Well, like, if you don't, you're going to get your butt handed to you, which is what we're having happen. So there is that factor of it as well. But I'm not mad about that part of it. I think that part of it is just evolution of the sport in general.
Yeah. It's interesting because you're one of the few that are in the middle, you know, honestly, John, I've talked to so many people about this in the last few months. And 90% are so for it, hardcore for it, draw a line in the sand. The other half are so against it, draw a line in the sand, and there's no middle ground, and you're in the middle. It's pretty unique. It's a unique stance.
My thought is that the technology, like I said, the horse is out of the barn, I think. You can't put it back in.
Yeah.
Because then it's just going to be, I don't know. It's going to get really complicated in some ways. So I would always challenge the people that didn't want forward facing sonar I room with a couple of them. I'm like, look, give us a solution. Give me a solution. You can't just, it's not going to be banned. Get that out of your head. Ain't going to be banned. Yeah. So give me a solution. Nobody has been able to give me a solution that's any good.
Right.
In my opinion, they're all garbage. Just not viable. Not garbage. They're not viable. It's not likely to happen. It's not going to happen. Can't be used at other levels of tournaments because most tournaments are one day tournaments, and you know all this stuff. So I got back from Texas, and our warehouse manager at Missile Mark, he is a complete, if there was ever a fish head, he is the epitome of fish. Fishes two, three times a week. If he doesn't, he gets very cranky. he eats, breathes, and sleeps fishing and everything. And we've had this discussion multiple times.
Yeah.
About forward facing. He got forward facing sonar a couple years ago. He's fished his whole life. He's a few years. I think he's closer to your age than mine, but we're about the same age. He's been fishing since he was a little kid. When he got forward facing sonar, it was like fishing was all new to him again. He could not wait to hook his boat up to this truck to go to the lake because it was
of
like
forward facing.
It's all new. Everything's new again. He's relearning all these different ways to catch the things that he loved. He's not going to just go out there and pound the bank with a spinnerbait or a crankbait or a jig or something like he's done for 40 some years. Right. So it's all new to him. And I'm like, that's what we need to capture and take with us from Forward Facing Center. So his idea was, he said, what if you had a time clock on Forward Facing Sonar that you could only use it for 8 hours for the whole tournament?
Right.
And I'm like, that's good. But so we kind of beat the idea back and forth. And I said, dude, I promise you, every electronics manufacturer could do a software update very easily.
Yeah.
That each day you would only be allowed to use your forward facing sonar transducer for, let's say, 2, 3, 4 hours, whatever.
Yeah.
A portion of the day, not the whole day.
Yeah.
A portion of the day. And I don't care. Let the anglers vote on it. Let whoever vote on it. I don't let the fans vote on it. I don't care. Yeah. Some arbitrary time between, I think, 2 to 4 hours, somewhere in there, that you can use your transducer and you can turn it on and off.
Right.
And what you do is you have they would have a tournament mode that you would have they would log, like, let's just say Garmin. So you'd have Lowrance, but they could both do it easily. They could have a tournament mode. You turn your tournament mode on in the hard drive of the unit. It would be logged when that tournament mode is turned off and when it's turned on. And during the tournaments, all of our units have to be turned into tournament mode, practice and the tournament.
Right.
So you would only have 2 to 4 hours, whatever it is, to use that forward-facing sonar, and then you can turn it on and off. So, like, if you're running your boat from one spot to another, you can turn the transducer off and then turn it back on so that you can use it if you want to. So maybe you look and you find a school of fish. You're like, oh, sweet, there they are. You turn it off and then make your cast. And then you're fishing like normal, or you catch one and then you turn it off. So you can use it however you want to for that allotted time period. And in that 24-hour period, that each day, when your time is up, it will no longer be of service and no longer be used. And that kind of a tournament mode could be used in, I mean, if BFLs or local team tournaments or whoever wanted to use it, you'd have to do it. If you didn't have tournament mode on your forward-facing sonar, you can't use it.
Can't use it, right. That is, honestly, John, that's the most interesting, idea that I've heard. I've heard a lot of them. The funny thing is,
you'd still have to use it if that was applicable, but it wouldn't be it wouldn't be like all day just blindly going around in the middle of nowhere.
Right. You still have it as a tool. The manufacturers still have the ability to sell it, so it doesn't hurt their sales. Yep. Right. The forward facing sonar guys are happy because it's not eliminated totally. It's definitely an interesting take on it. And the funny thing, John, and this is, your version is a better version of this, but 2 years ago, not last fall, but the fall before, you remember I went to Italy to fish that standalone bass tournament. It was on a really famous lake in Italy called Lake Bolsena. And in this event, because here's the reality. Europeans hate forward-facing sonar more than Randy Blockett. Okay? So, honestly, like Europeans are like Randy Blockett times 10. But they didn't like it, but competitors were coming from other countries that had it and wanted to utilize it. And they created what was called a power hour in this tournament. And for 1 hour each day, you were allowed to use forward-facing sonar. So it was different, and it wasn't as flexible, right? Like, the minute that you turned it on, you only got an hour from that point. And, of course, they had officials in the boat to monitor that hour. So it's a little rougher version of what you're talking about. But I think that's got some legs,
That didn't have the ability, the power. They don't have the ability to reprogram their units.
Right.
So that's like the best they could come up with. And I think that's a really cool twist on it. I think that's cool as heck. It makes it fun, interesting. When are you going to use it? That kind of stuff.
Right.
Maybe it is 1 hour that we get to use it per day. But we need buy-in from all the electronics companies. I mean, I think that I would hope that they would all embrace it and do it. And I think it would only be for forward-facing sonar. I think if somebody wanted to have 360, that's not affected. Side imaging, not affected. Yeah. It's only for the forward-facing sonar transducer, either in perspective or in forward. And if you have multiple transducers, it's the same thing. But you got your 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever we vote on, whatever the fans vote on, whoever votes on, that's what we have to work with. And hopefully, if the manufacturers will reprogram our units to do that, I think it would be fairly easy for them to do that. It would be a lot of fun. It would just throw in another element. And here's the other part: they could use it in crappie fishing tournaments too.
Right.
And it would help. Right. Yes, the same program. It would help. You know, kind of eliminate some of the problems over there because they got a few. You know, FFS experts over there that are just, you know, working everybody even if it doesn't level the playing field, it makes the perception that everything is going to be leveled.
Yeah. So you mentioned that getting buy-in from the electronic manufacturers would be key, obviously, but what else, John, would it take to make a change like this? What else do you think it would take for this to happen?
I think the first thing would be the buy-in from the electronics companies, and then, you know, like run it across the Elite Series field. If the Elite Series field votes for it, in favor of it, then we vote in favor of a certain time period. And then once we vote for that, and if we adopt it, and I think you'll see the crappie fishing tournaments, you'll see other tournament trails adopt it. Because once the electronics companies are going to do it, everybody will have access to those updates. Everybody will be able to kind of emulate what Bassmaster does.
Right.
And I think that would be kind of a cool solution. I think that would make a lot of people happy to where you're not, you know, for 8 hours on live watching, you know, somebody stare at their screen, which is what a lot of people complain about. I mean, like, I'm indifferent on it, but a lot of people, that's what they complain. They don't want to see that. All right. Yeah. Well, you only got to watch for it an hour or 2 hours or whatever it is that somebody's doing that. Learn what they're doing with it, but then see what they learn from watching their forward facing. So maybe they stay in the same areas and fish different. Right. Maybe they completely change what they're doing and go throw a chatterbait in the back of a creek. Maybe they're like, all right, I'm going to do this while I can, and then I'm going to go throw topwater and try to catch some big ones or whatever their strategy might be. I think that will re-engage the fans. It'll be, you know, a tournament strategy situation. Do you use it early? Do you use it late?
Right. Part of the strategy.
Yeah. It'd be a lot of fun.
Cool concept, John. Thank you for saying that on Ike Live for the first time, because I've never heard that. And I think our listeners and I think the fans would at least, you know, consider changing their mind a little bit, thinking about it, you know, maybe not a hard right or a hard left. This brings it in the middle a little bit, which I like.
Exactly.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, as some states have even proposed banning it because they think it's detrimental to certain. That would eliminate the need to do that in my opinion. If certain states might say, you know, you can only use tournament mode, you know, to fish for muskie or crappie or whatever.
Right.
You know, it might. I mean, some of these states might make it part of their legislation to keep it regulated to where things are not over harvested. I don't know. Right. I just think that that's a possible solution that would be kind of cool.
Yeah. Super, super cool. Real quick, while we're on the topic, just got done a very unique tournament that went the opposite way. And they just said, we had an event at Lake Lanier. In fact, today, as I'm talking to you, John, today's the top 12, last day fishing today. But they literally just said, no technology, no forward-facing sonar, no 360, and limited practice. Four-hour ride-around reminds me of the old-school MLF events back before MLF bit the bullet. How do you feel about that particular format? Did you follow it? Do you like that? Do you think there's a need for a tournament trail like that?
I think there's some merit to doing some specialty events like that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's not really any media coverage of this event. I mean, it was really kind of just a test of like guys throwing their money whole lot of money in a hat and then fishing for it with these unique rules. I think they're doing it just to kind of see the interest, you know, was there interest from the anglers? Was there interest from the fans?
Yeah.
You know, some different ideas with it. I don't know. I think it would be fun to do that kind of an event.
Yeah.
But it lends itself also to having a local, huge local advantage for people that are familiar with that lake, that whatever lake it may be on. So I don't like the no practice thing. I think that's kind of silly. At least a day or two. I mean, 3 days seems to be the kind of optimal practice period, or 2 days and an off day, whatever you want to do. So, I mean, you got to have some practice, or you guys from, you know, 3 hours, 4 hours away that may have only been there once or twice, they're going to say, I'm not fishing that. I'm like, the locals are just going to dominate me because I don't know all the spots that they live.
Right.
So I don't know. I think that they could tweak the format and make it really cool. Sounds like it would be a fun, I do think that there could be the ingredients for a tournament circuit of familiar names with a similar type of format. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
I do know. And I miss those, you know, if you're watching and listening and you're a young guy, you have no idea what I'm talking about. If you're old, you know, there was a time in the sport where bass had a lot of specialty events, the E50s and Mega Bucks and, you know, the Last Chance tournaments to make the classic. And I always thought that those standalone events were fun and created ways to expand the season, to extend the season. And so I agree with you. I'd love to see more of those. I'd love to see some more of those formats as specialty events. I think it's a good thing. All right, John. I know you're driving. I got one more thing I want to hit you with. This will be our grand finale, the exclamation point of this interview. And for me personally, I need to hear this from you.
Okay.
You mentioned it earlier in the podcast, the very top of this podcast. We've had not ideal starts, you and I. We've had, you know, what I would call below average, slower starts to our season. Or you might just call them shit. You know, terrible. Shit would be another, right. Terrible or shit would be another good way to mention our starts. But, you know, the good news is we've got 7 events left, right? We've got a long season ahead of us. Tell me, John, us and me, what do we need to do starting at Harris Chain to turn the season around and to make the classic and to get momentum and to hopefully put ourselves in position to win? What do we need to do?
So I thought it was very interesting. I heard you, Mike, say this on stage in Texas, is that you were not going to let these events define your season. That was exactly what you said. And when you said that, it hit me like a brick. Like, that's it. Yep. That's exactly what I'm after. And so the only way, it's a long season. We got 7 more events. Yeah. You just got to take one event at a time, one day at a time. And it's easier. It's a nice, like, you know, little way to say it, so to speak, but one event at a time, you focus on that event, you prepare yourself for that event, then you prepare yourself for each day of practice properly, have a good game plan, be ready to adapt, and then just take what the cards give you. Sometimes that might be a top 30 finish. Sometimes that might be just squeaking into a check. Sometimes that might be hey, don't screw this up because you're on top 10 fish. You might win the tournament. Yeah. So that's kind of the way I'm going about it, is that I'm going to just go like one event at a time, not do anything, not looking for a win on every tournament. I'm going to go see what I can find in practice and then go with what I'm given, so to speak. Yeah. That's kind of what I've done over my career. And that's what I'm going to kind of get, I feel like kind of get back to a little bit.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's a great theory. And it's funny, as you were saying that, I was thinking, man, this is what I preach to Vegas, my son Vegas, when he fishes his tournaments, these little junior tournaments he's fishing. I always preach, don't think about number five before you get one, right? Go out there, catch your first keeper. All right, you got one. Cool, you're going to get some points. Go to two. Got two.
That's right.
Cool, go to three. You get to four. Man, let's catch one more. We got four. Let's get, you know, I always teach him that. And it seems like it calms him down, puts his mind in the right place, and he's focused on that moment of the day rather than Thousand Islands in August, right? He's focused on that moment in time. So I love that, John. I love that. Do you mind if I steal that from you for these next couple of
minutes? No, no. I already stole your you're not going to let the Texas tournaments define my season. I already stole that. So you can have mine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. It's a great, great mindset. And I can't wait to see you down there in a couple of days. I'm going to be a little behind you. I'm leaving tomorrow, man. And I'll be getting down Saturday, and we start our practice on Sunday. We have an off day. So let me know if you guys go to dinner on, what would that be? Tuesday night.
Tuesday.
If you guys end up going,
that's a deal.
If you guys end up going to, give me a call. I'll come hang with you guys. And I appreciate you coming on the podcast, John. It's always great having you on, catching up with you.
We're going to have some stiff drinks and some good food. How about that?
Yeah. Stiff drinks and big meat, like big piece of meat, you know, medium rare, any kind of meat, just big meat cooked. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? I love it. Yes. All right, John, have a safe drive. We're going to see you in a couple days.
Thanks, right, Mike, man. Later. We'll see you soon, buddy. Thanks for having me on.
Later, John. You got it. All right, guys, there you have it. John Cruz, dude, always great having him on the show. Really, really, honestly, I would say in my lifetime, one of the best friends I have in the fishing industry in my life. Good dude, smart business guy, and hell of a fisherman. So thanks to John Cruz for carving some time out when you're driving. And he didn't get in an accident. He didn't even hit a deer or didn't run into a guardrail or anything like that, which was great. Let me remind you, keep those comments coming. Guys, if you're watching and listening right now, I cannot tell you how happy I am to see the comments coming through on you liking the new format of the show. One-on-one, up close and personal, Ike Live 2.0. Man, it's been a lot of fun doing these shows. So thank you for the comments, but keep them coming. If you've got a guest or a topic that you want to hear about, send them in the email or the description comment section right here below this podcast, and we will get that done for you. Also, want to remind you, the show is brought to you by Abu Garcia, the maker of some amazing rods and reels. Head on over to abugarcia.com and check them out. Revo Rocket spinning reel. Dude, 7.6-1, like fire's coming off of it as your reel net baited. That's how quick it is. Also brought to you by the Ike Foundation, getting kids fishing one at a time. Head over there. It's theikefoundation.org. If you go there, you're going to get great information on how you could help, how you could get kids fishing. Also info on there on a lot of these events we have coming up. And there's a lot. And just a reminder, June 1st, Upper Chesapeake Bay, the Ike Foundation Pro-Am, and, we do have a limit in this tournament, guys, 150 boat cap. So you want to enter sooner than later, and you're going to have a chance to win a Basscat Yamaha valued at over $40,000. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money for a tournament up here in the Northeast. So go over there, sign up for that event. It's going to be a really, really good. Thank you guys for joining us. Always a good time catching up with the guests, and we will see you at the next show, hopefully with a blue trophy. Bye, guys. See ya.
Do you fish for excitement? Do you fish for passion? Do you fish to get outside? or do you fish to win?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Abu Garcia for life.
You know, right now where we're standing, we're in Camden, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Philadelphia is right there. This is the concrete jungle. And, you know, a lot of those kids, as they grow up, they don't fish. It's interesting because they're surrounded by water. You know, the Delaware River, the Schuylkill, ponds, city park lakes. But they don't have the influence to cast, to fish, to have a rod and reel. And that really, that became our focus, you yeah. know, is to target kids in what we call non-traditional areas, yeah. you know, urban areas, city centers, where the population's high, and let these kids have an experience. You know, it's amazing. I mean, some of the experiences we've had, whether it's Central Park in New York City, here in Camden, other parts of the country, even just casting.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable to see it, isn't it?
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
Yes.
And you know, you see these kids have this experience they've never had, and they light up, you know? The big thing, I think, for the Ike Foundation is we're not saying we want all these kids to become professional anglers.
No.
It'd be great if some of them did, but we want them to have that fishing experience because it ties them to so many other positive things. The outdoors, nature, conservation, ecology, you know, all these amazing things in life that maybe they wouldn't have been exposed to any other way, we're trying to help with that. So it's important. It's important for us. Yeah. We're proud of it.
I subscribe to Bass U TV, and so should you.
Great place to learn about anything you want to know about bass fishing.
You get it at Bass U. We got the best of the best.
I'm not just an instructor, I'm a subscriber.
I'm John Cruz, and I am a subscriber.
You can always learn, and watching Bass U is definitely helps with that. It's something that I like to do, and it's definitely something that you need to do.
If I'm still learning, you should be too.
Subscribe to Bass U, because you'll learn how to catch a lot more fish.
Ike Live, brought to you exclusively by Abu Garcia.